Okay, well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Bus Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, November 9th, 2020. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded. The meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com, just as we do for all the full committee and both the subcommittee meetings. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone call. As you know, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself when you need to speak. You can also raise virtual hands by pressing star 9 or lower your virtual hands by pressing star 9. Everyone joining the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And you can click on the hand to raise your virtual hands and lower hands when speaking. Because we have ASL interpreters on the line with us, please state your name first and then your comment. This helps them do their job well. It also helps anyone joining via phone call to know who is speaking. We do appreciate one person speaking at a time. As everyone may be on mute at this time, but as I said, you can unmute yourself when you need to. By raising virtual hand indicates your intent to speak, so it does help everyone take turns in speaking, and I appreciate your effort in that, so thank you in advance. At this time, I will go ahead and take the roll call of the committee. For as soon as I can find my mouse. So for today's meeting, here's the roll call. Alvar Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson. Steve Caffin is joining as we take his name. Mary Kay McMahon. I see Mary Kay is joining right now. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Here.
Thank you. Paul Semelford. Patrick Sheehan. And Kelly Simonon.
Kelly's here.
Thank you, Kelly.
And Steve Caffin.
I have you. Thank you, Steve. Okay. I saw when you were joining, so I did mark you. Thank you. So that concludes our roster for today's meeting. Next, I will read the agenda for today's meeting. And the agenda is as follows. We just went through the roll call. Next, we will review and approve today's agenda and prior meeting minutes. afterwards, we have a presentation by Terry Anamnachi. She is going to provide us with an update for new Fairgates alarm alternate sounds. Next presentation is by Tom Proctor and Brian Anderson. They're going to give us information about station signage and information. Committee is going to discuss a topic, Metro is safe for riders with disabilities and seniors, followed by the ombudsman report, followed by public comment. The committee will discuss new old business and work plan updates, and the meeting will adjourn at 6 p.m. that was the agenda for today's bus rail subcommittee meeting. At this time, I would ask Chair Calabia to move the meeting forward. Chair Calabia, you have the floor.
Thank you, Anu.
You're welcome.
I have a count of 8 members who are present, I believe. Anyway, the agenda has been shared with everybody by Anu. All in favor of adopting this agenda, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. With respect to the prior meeting minutes, we did quickly go over them during the AAC meeting, but I like to add that I noted since the AAC meeting, a couple of things that I would like to clear up. The fifth paragraph mentions that the filtration process, the best kind would involve ultraviolet. Actually, it's ultraviolet C. C as in Charlie. There are ultraviolet A, ultraviolet B, and the germicidal filtration system that I've been talking about and that I've sent out emails on is ultraviolet C. I'd also like to say that I think it's in that same paragraph. I complimented Mr. Loney and his staff for the overnight work that they carry out. But I also mentioned that once the rail cars, of course, the train with the rail cars leaves the yard, it goes into stations, and should a person who's infected with the coronavirus get on at the first stop or the second stop or any stop towards the end, that rail car is contaminated. I'd like to make that clear in the minutes. Otherwise, are there any other things that people who have reviewed the minutes want to discuss or to revise? If not, can I take a vote on adopting the minutes of last month's bus rail subcommittee? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, with the corrections that I've mentioned just now, the agenda is adopted. The next item is again to hear the alternate sounds for the new fare gates. Terry, welcome back. This is about your fourth trip to us, I believe. In any event, if you could let us know what the status is now of the fare gate announcements, the new fare gate.
Thank you.
Sure.
I'm happy to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to interact with the committee, and I have great respect for the feedback and what I learned in getting perspective as, you know, we try to implement the best solution that we can for our fare gates. So after our last meeting, I think that, you know, we got additional feedback about acceptable tones, and I think we were able to narrow in on sounds that were more acceptable to the committee. And so they've updated that. So what I'd like to do today, and I knew if it can bring up the presentation, not just to talk about the audio tones, so we'll play back little video clips, because we actually have gates in our AFC lab right now. And so just to kind of give everybody a sense of where we are in the project, the customer experience altogether, how we will relay information, including the audio tones, And then I'm hoping that we can get additional feedback so that we can finalize the audio sounds as we go into formal testing. So if you can go to the next slide, Anu. So like I said, we'll talk about the status, we'll talk about the customer interface, and then I'll talk about where we go from here to really finalize things. So I mean, we're making good progress on the Fairgate project. We've completed our design. If you recall, the Fairgates are working with our legacy payment application, so we're not updating SmartTrip, but we have to make the Fairgates work with SmartTrip, and we've done that integration development. The application work for the Fairgate in itself has been developed. We've completed our first article inspection testing, and that's where we went to see if the sensors work and make sure that it was safe and we didn't have any production issues or safety hazards with the gates, and that went well. And right now we have gates in AFC lab and we've been doing informal testing. Coming up at the, well, we start our formal Fairgate first article functional testing in early December. So we hope to get through that before the Christmas holidays. Mm-hmm. And then we go into the payment application testing, systems integration testing, a pilot demonstration, which we hope to have in place the end of April or early May. And if that goes well, we'll roll into deployment. So just an overview. So the customer interface. So there's more to the customer interface than the audio. We've talked about audio, and I think we put a lot of attention on the audio because, you know, when we first demonstrated the prototype gates, there was a lot of concern that the audio files that were being used were just not acceptable. And so we've really tried to migrate to something that we believe better serves our customers. But, you know, there are other things that we have: larger displays, more transaction information, balance information, et cetera, fare evasion alarms, and light indicators. And so today, as we kind of review those audio indicators, we're also just going to kind of look at some videos of what the actual display is and how we're going to relay information. And then, you know, that's a great opportunity to get additional feedback from this community. So we start with the customer interface is for the successful stored value. So again, you know, customer, you know, if you have sufficient balance on your card, then, you know, there's a specific tones and video that we can expect. Now, I think we agreed that we would not have this positive, successful tone activated unless we determined it was necessary because there was risk of, you know, being confused with the next gate or just the constant tone all day long. So, but we still designed for it. So Anu, if you can press the video and we can hear that tone and see the display. I did not hear the tone.
It's quite faint, actually. I can hear it, but it's quite faint. I'll play it again. Could anyone hear it?
No.
Okay. It's quite faint. I'm not. My volume is highest.
Yeah, we might have to find a better way to validate.
Let's see.
Because I could hear it fine on my computer, but.
I'm trying, okay, give me 1 second. I think I may be able to resolve this issue. One moment. Okay. I'll play it again. No?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I increased the volume and it's still.
Yeah, we have to find a better way to validate these sounds. But I will draw your attention to just some of the graphics. If you can see the screen. So we have different ways of indicating a successful transaction. You see this light indicator is green. So that light comes on, there's a checkbox to say that the transaction was successful. And there's balance information to say, what's the balance on the card? So, I mean, the current gate gives you balance information, but it's very small and difficult to read. So we're definitely expanding the experience and the information that we're sharing.
Excuse me, Terry, this is Carol Lopez. I was wondering, you said that you could hear it in your PC. Can you play something right now and see if we can hear it?
I'm actually in the office and I don't have this downloaded. It was on my.
Okay.
So, and I know Anu had the same file. She could hear it when she downloaded the files, but it's not updating through Zoom. And that's unfortunate.
What does it sound like? Is it a bing or a
Yeah, it was just the bung, you know, just it was just kind of So
and you're not at
Do we have a copy of this presentation? This is Pat Sheehan. Do we have a copy of this presentation?
Actually,
Pat, Terry, this is Anu. I could not share this presentation because of the size. It's a very large presentation. So I will have to determine how I can share it with the committee.
Okay. Yeah. You read my mind. That's what I was trying to do. Go to plan B, right? Okay.
Yes, we're going to have to find a way to share. And I will note that this is not final. So my bosses didn't want to publish this. For example, that tap here, signage is not final. So we wanted to give you examples, but we were a little concerned that we didn't want to share too much because everything is not 100% just yet.
Anu, this is David. There is a setting in Zoom where you have to tell it to play computer audio, because I use that if I have to use charts over Zoom. So in addition to joining with audio, there's separate in a button you have to choose. It's not computer audio, it's just hearing what your computer says out of its microphone. That's the difference.
Okay, so I would have to stop sharing and then work on the volume. Terry, would it be possible for me to get the individual video separately afterwards so that it can be shared with the committee?
Yes, I can absolutely in another week give you an updated version of this with the latest. So I can walk through the screens today.
Yes.
And then send you an updated file next week.
Right. So and at that point we'll be able to share it with the committee. And I apologize that we are not able to share it at this time prior to the meeting because of lack of sufficient time. I was not able to figure out how to share it prior to the meeting.
It's okay, Anu.
Okay.
But why don't we just kind of talk through the different screens and the different, and just for the opportunity to just get some more general feedback. Okay. We also have, again, a negative tone. And the negative tone now is we have more information that we can share. So we have one, if we have insufficient balance. And that happens if the card has below the minimum entry threshold or insufficient value to complete the payment. So if you show the video again, you'll see that you get a red light here. So the indicator light turns red to say there's a problem. We'll get a negative tone of the negative tones that we talked about. And we actually get a message so customers can also know the reason that they can't get through is that they have insufficient value. So if you tap the screen again for audio, you'll see the message come up on the display. Okay. We also, again, because we're able to give additional information, we're also able to customer interface if you're paying with a past product. Sometimes customers have both balance and past products. And so another opportunity that we have with additional display information is that we can let customers know that it was a past product that it was paid with instead of stored value. So if you show the video of this screen, it says pass accepted. So we know that this was paid for with a past product instead of stored value. It doesn't show your balance, but it lets you know that the pass was accepted. Now, if you've got an invalid pass, if you have an expired pass, you know, student passes expire or things like that, we have a negative message and we also have different messages. So if we look at the screen here, to see station manager. You know, so if you have additional problems, that's not just a balance information, it tells you to see the station manager. And then we have alarms and for fare evasion. And one of the things, if somebody's jumping over the barrier or trying to force the barrier or piggybacking, coming close behind someone, again, it's gonna be harder to piggyback behind someone because of all of our extra sensors. But we have an alarm here and this is not programmable, unfortunately. So this alarm is generated by the system itself. So it's not something that we can change, but we wanted to give you an example of that sound. And then you'll see also what happens is that the fare gate lights up and blinks and flashes. And then we get this really loud, annoying sound. And we can show the video of this, even though the audio is not available. So if you were there, you would see a very loud, annoying sound. You see the gates lighting up and we'll be able to track anybody who does this. So we'll have accurate counts of people who are jumping the barrier. And again, we get a very negative sound and it's very loud and annoying.
Terry, you said that you could track the fare evader. How do you do that?
Well, we can't track them individually, but we can count. We'll know how often it's happening. We'll know where it's happening. We can track back the video in the station because we'll have the same timestamps for all of that information.
Okay.
So, you know, and again, sound-wise, it's just a very annoying sound. This is not one that we have any choice in, but when you get the audio, you'll be able to distinguish that. Okay. So the thing is that, you know, we're nearing in the project where it's getting harder and harder to make changes to the customer interface. And some things we're at a stage now that we cannot change. So things like the image color, everything is black and white, that's fixed. We can't change that without significant cost to the project. Same thing with the font and the font size. And then the sound when the customer jumps the barrier. Those things are fixed, not changeable. With the audio and the icon images, I'd like to finalize this by the end of the month because that's when I go into first article testing. But potentially, if there are real concerns or thoughts about this, you know, we have probably until the end of February if we have to make any changes. Anything after February gets really hard to change. It gets a lot of cost implications and schedule implications to the project. So I just wanted to say that I welcome input. I think that the opportunity to share where we're going and get feedback is an opportunity to make this as good as it can get. And I'm committed to that. But I do have schedule constraints, and I just wanted to kind of put that out there. So I welcome any comments or questions about the project.
Members, any questions or comments?
This is Darnie, so I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
In terms of going through the gate where it makes a loud noise, what about small children? When people bring, you know, minors, they have—
Yes, so the sensors on the gate, there's a protection zone inside the gate sensors for people under a certain height. So traveling with somebody, and I don't have the number on the top of my head because, you know, customers under 4 years old, I want to say it's close to about 4 feet, but it may be a little less than that. But we do have the sensors, a sensor protection zone. It's also there for assistance animals, right? If you have an assistance animal, the gate will not close on you if you're under a certain height. That's why the design has all of these extra sensors around it to make it safer for people traveling with assistance animals or with small children.
And my other question is, what about people that use walkers, usually use walkers or maybe metal crutches to will they have like additional time to get through or?
Yes, so the sensors on the gate, and I'd love to be able to demonstrate this to you. The sensors on the gate, and maybe I can get some better videos of those things as well. As long as you're in that protective zone, the gate cannot close on you. So if you're taking more time to get through the gate because you have a walker or other challenges, if you're in that protective zone, it will not close on you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? If not, we thank you again, Terry. You've always been gracious in accepting comments. Yes, Steve.
Sorry, I pressed the wrong button and muted myself. is the screen, I may have missed this, is the screen programmable for eventual credit card use?
So the system is forward compatible so that we can, when we're ready to move forward with credit card use in our system, we will have to update it though. We haven't designed screens for that. So that's gonna be a major software update. But the system is designed to be forward compatible for that future inevitability of our fare payments.
You know, I think, that could be a big cost saver too, because many visitors to the city use only the metro without transferring to other to buses. And by having that capability, you know, it saves them time to purchase a metro card, and it also gives the station manager a little more flexibility. He's not dealing with showing people how to use the machines, but rather attending to other operations.
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is something that we've wanted to implement for quite a while. There have been a lot of challenges with that, but in building this system, one of the key requirements that we had for the payment targets and the technology that we're introducing is that it's all forward compatible with credit card payments, so that there is a lot of work associated in the back end to make that happen. That's not part of this project, but the gates, the screens, and the payment processing targets that we've installed are all forward compatible so that we can migrate to that. We know it's something that we want to do.
Excellent question, Steve, and a great answer.
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. I see Ms. Rush, she has her hand up, and then I have a question from Al Gore. Ms. Rush, did you have any question or comments? Ms. Rush, we cannot hear you. I'm not sure if you are, you don't seem on mute, but we cannot hear you if you're speaking. Ms. Rush, if you can hear me, we cannot hear you if you're trying to speak. Now we can hear you.
Okay, I've been talking. I didn't have anything to say.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
I'll lower your hand. Terry, we have one question from Elber. His question, his comment is, do Metro Access Smart Trip cards need to be updated or adjust their cards to go through the new gates?
No. So one of the biggest pieces of this project has been to make it compatible with our existing payment system. We are updating old Go cards. So if you have the oldest cards in the system that were introduced 20 years ago, and we do have a few hundred thousand of those out there, not all of them active, but we will be replacing some of the oldest model of cards. But for most customers, the overwhelming number of customers, they will not have to update their fare media.
That includes the senior smart trip card?
Right, so it's not the card itself. We've been issuing cards for 25 years, smart trip cards. And the first cards that we introduced, the oldest cards in the system, have a different technology that's not compatible with our new readers that are forward compatible with credit card payments. So we will have a project that will be coming up to get rid of the oldest cards in the system. And so for those who have a senior disabled card, because we will know who you are, we will be able to track those cards down pretty easily and say you will have to get an updated card and issue those updated cards. We have some other customers where it may be a little bit more challenging, and there's a project that will be starting early next year to retrieve and replace customers who have the oldest technology fare cards.
Any other questions or comments?
I do not see any hands up.
Okay, again, Terry, thank you very much. You're always gracious in receiving our comments and our questions, and we thank you. Since you have a preliminary deadline of November 30th, is it possible that our next subcommittee meeting, which is this coming Monday, would it be possible to hear what we didn't hear today? To hear it next Monday?
I could try. So let me get with my team to see if they can redo videos. I'm just not sure that I have all of the latest stickers and things to publish. But I'd like to come back. If I can't do it in next week, I'll come back in December with everything updated, and maybe we can redo the audio tones. Preference in November was just to do it before first article testing, but sure. If I can't do it, we'll do it in December, and we'll have more information to share.
Terrific. Again, thank you very much, Terry. We're right on time, and the next item is the station signage and information. With Brian Anderson and Tom. Hello?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
Hi, yes. This is Tom Proctor. I'm the environmental graphic designer. I work in the engineering and architecture department. I've been with Metro for about 5 years. I believe this is my second, if not my third time, meeting with you all in this great community. It's my pleasure to be back again. There's been a lot of exciting things that we've done within Metro over the past, I would say, 3 years that have really pushed the envelope as far as merging WMATA into the technology age, I would say. A lot of bumpy roads, but some challenges have been met, and I think we've been victorious in many cases of trying to solve some of the issues that we've been having as far as how to most effectively deliver real-time information and help support the customer experience. I sent over a brief presentation. I think we see if we can get that shared up onto the screen here. And I'll just kind of get started with this. I know there's going to be a lot of follow-up questions, or at least I would hope to. There would be some questions to kind of answer and get into some of the weeds on a lot of this stuff. But I think one of the things I wanted to address here is that there's been some questions asked about, you know, we've been seeing some removals of some signage that a lot of our customers and employees alike have seen show up missing. And it's not that they're missing because we're getting rid of them. They're missing because we're improving upon our strategy of providing customer information and wayfinding in our station. Removal of static signs, station ahead lists is one of the, I think, primary reasons why I've been called to present to you today. Station ahead lists, they come in two different varieties. You have a horizontal configuration to where it's like a sign that's typically placed on a wall. And it'll let you know the station that you're at, the stations that are ahead of you, and the stations that will come, the other direction. And in this presentation, in this discussion that we're having today, I hope to be able to provide enough information to show you how WMATA is intending to replace static station ahead lists and many other static signage with dynamic digital information displays. I'm going to go over an overview of our digital signage as a part of a far more reaching element of our station modernization, which is not only going to include signage, but also a lot of advancements in other accessibility upgrades, cleaning efforts, lighting efforts, non-slip tile efforts. A lot of the elements that maybe you have or maybe not have seen over the past two summers where we've done platform improvement projects, namely out in King Street, Paddock Road, most recently Vienna, Dunloring, just to name a few. We can move along to the next slide, please. So just some background information of why we got to the place where we are. We're actually removing the station ahead list. A lot of it has to do with the expansion of the Silver Line stations. We're facing, I guess, six new stations, which is going to pose a challenge to us. And how do we put six new stations on signage and on in our stations that will actually allow us to meet with ADA compliance? Right now, a lot of our station ahead lists that are out in the station now, unfortunately, they are not ADA compliant. They don't meet font height requirements. Sometimes they due to age and environmental factors such as brake dust and erosion or other natural things, they've become kind of faded. So the contrast between the background and the fonts have been diminished to the point where legibility becomes a problem. Like I said, we're emerging into an atmosphere where digital displays are becoming more and more attuned to what the customers anticipate on seeing. And from our standpoint at WMATA, what we've seen over the past couple of years is that, you know, our service has had some ebbs and flows. You'll have Yellow Line going to Fort Totten, or maybe the Yellow Line goes to Greenbelt. But what a lot of people don't realize is that when we make these little small service changes, it has a big impact on our signage. Anytime we reduce service to a different terminus station, say we go from Greenbelt, we stop running Yellow Line trains from Greenbelt and we stop them at Fort Totten, well, we have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of signage that would have to be retrofitted. Using digital displays gives us the flexibility to be on real time just by using a digital platform, updating our information, which reduces our demand on our man force, our workforce, and actually materials, procurement processes, all of these things, to be able to do this without lag times, and also be able to have one set of directions for a period of time, if it's a temporary outage or service delay, to go back to normal operating schedules. WMATA's platforms for digital information delivery, we'll go through that towards the end of the slide. But I'll just like to give you a little bit of more of an extensive, background into how we got to where we are. Next slide, please. All right, so you've heard me speak before about font requirement, and some of our signage that we have out in the field right now don't meet these very, very strict font requirements as far as signage, font sizes from viewing distances, and background and contrast. This here is just the formula that helps me on my day-to-day task to kind of formulate, as I'm putting signage into the station, what guidelines must I abide by, which guidelines should I ensure that contractors abide by, and when I'm working within other WMATA disciplines, the guidance that I can provide them to make sure that they have the best information, to make sure that we're delivering content and information to our customers that meet all aspects of compliance, especially ADA compliance. Next slide, please. So we go into here, we talk about font requires versus viewing distances. You'll see the top graphic shows what a station ahead list might look like currently. If this was viewed on a typical side platform station on a vault wall with 5-inch text with viewing distances up to 6 feet, we would be well within compliance. All would be well in the world. However, you'll see a lot of these signage actually across the track bed on vault wall signs. For those signs to actually be ADA compliant, you would need to use, based off of the chart I displayed in the slide previous to this one, 2-inch tall text in order to make them meet the ADA requirements. So each of these stations, Argo Town Center, Morgan Boulevard, Addison Road, all of those stations would have to go from a 5/8-inch text, which is viewable for up to 6 feet, to 2-inch text for viewable up to 15 feet. So that poses a challenge. Not only did we have to expand our signage to accommodate additional stations in Silverline Phase 2, but we also had to go back in and say, all of the signage that now, with the information we have in current ADA compliance standards, we know that this sign, we would need to make our signs compliance meeting this profile. So you'll see that the sign on the bottom is 32 feet long, which is a massive space when you're talking about a station that's already competing with information for station name signage. We have emergency signage. We have train predictions. We have a lot of signage in the system. So when we introduce a sign this large, it really creates a problem as far as spatial being able to meet the demand spatially. But not only that, in the industry, vendors cannot manufacture signs this big in a practical way. We would have to use a tiling system to where we have several different panels put together to make a one sign face, and trust me, it is not attractive. If you can go to the next slide, please. So this is an example of what one of those 32-foot long signs will look like in one of our underground stations. As you can see, the model standing in the picture reference a typical man and woman waiting in a queuing stance on a platform. This sign across the track bed is massive. Can you skip to the next slide, please? And also, I brought to your attention earlier as well, not only do we have the horizontal station ahead list in the system, but we also have the vertical ones, which are typically seen on pylons on the platform. Again, a lot of these station ahead lists currently, even if they do have the 5/8-inch text, they still fall below the 48-inch minimum from finished floor mounting height. When we start adding the additional stations for instance, like all the way out to Ashburn, we're going to see station and handlers that could actually extend pretty close to the finished school. Next slide. And here we have an example of using one of the new platform shelters that you'll see on our more updated stations. Like I said, the platform one and platform phase two project we just completed. We explored how would this look on one of these if we were to apply a station ahead list to one of these shelters. Now, trying to accommodate this may work in some situations. For instance, if you're looking at the rear of it, which is on the left, you'll see that you can kind of, you know, put this sign, attach it to the shelter. However, it would limit the information to the passengers who are queuing on the opposite side of the shelter. It would be obstructed by the supporting structure of the shelter itself. If you can move to the next slide, please. Now, for these reasons, we went through an extensive program of trying to determine what could we do about this and how could we actually effectively present this information to our customers. And through a couple pilot projects, we did one that was out at McPherson Square where we took a digital display. We had it in a lab for several weeks, 4 months. Then we kind of sat and played with information. We had several participants come down and view and provide feedback. We worked with Carol quite a bit in trying to get her input from her staff, seeing how we can, what kind of guidelines could be provided as far as transition rates. You'll see on this slide, this is just an example. This isn't what we, not this slide. You can go back to the other one. Still talking to this one. You'll see that there's a scrolling station ahead list on the top of this, as well as a system map. Now, this is just, you know, for conceptual purposes as we were developing our digital platforms as far as utilizing them for more flexible information, providing more than just one information per screen. The vision is, however, is that we wouldn't be limited to just a station ahead list. We wouldn't be limited to just a system map, but we can actually put in emergency messaging. We could announce service updates, service delays. We can do trip planning, a lot of different key features. Flexibility is the name of the game when it comes to digital platforms. So one of the things that we really wanted to explore and took us a long time to kind of put our finger on it was, you know, what screen size suits this? How could we accommodate this? Meet the 5/8 inch font sizes, present the most information as possible. And we went from a 32-inch screen, we went to a 46-inch screen, but we've actually landed on a 55-inch digital display that can actually be seen in a variety of our stations now that have undergone their platform improvement project. Next slide, please. So the response to the static signage challenges. So this goes back into it. So we've decided, okay, we can no longer work and provide a compliant format to provide this information, this key information to our customers. We've decided, hey, this digital thing, we can really do some good things with the digital displays. But now it's like, how do we integrate this into a useful platform on our stations? So what we've come up with is kind of like a kit of parts or a catalog, you can say, of digital displays and how we integrate them into the platform. So one would be the platform shelter. So the new stainless steel shelters would have two digital displays, one which faces each side of the shelter itself. So if you're sitting inside the platform, you have a 55-inch digital display that will be able to provide a plethora of ADA compliant information. We also, on platforms that do not have shelters or a shelter cannot be accommodated in the space, we have what we call our freestanding totem style, which is the second from the left. The same digital display, however, it's just standing on its own base, not confined within a structure, and it's a very versatile tool. A third method of displaying digital information is what we call either an info wall or an info hub. Now, an info wall or info hub is just as flexible as all of the rest. They're practically, if you look at the illustration, we did it intentionally, all of these screens are the same. The only thing that changes is how they're mounted in the structures and where they're placed inside the station. Next slide, please. So within the shelter itself, we just have some diagrams that kind of give you some scale. This is a nice clean approach. I mean, if any of you have been to like a King Street or Braddock Road or even to some of the newer stations that we've just finished, like Vienna, West Falls Church, East Falls Church, you'll be able to check these out in person. But it's a very clean product. The information on those are very legible. I'll have to admit that we are still working through some of the growing pains on making these kind of function and do the way they, you know, behave the way they're supposed to. But these are all the challenges that we look forward to taking on and tackling and improving over the next couple of months as we refine our processes. And here's a closer look at our info hub, kind of in its true club color. A Metro brown, traditional with a stainless steel top, the information cue on the header. It just serves as another outlet to where we can direct our customers to be able to go and trip plan, wayfinding, intermodal traffic. So if you're looking for other modes of transportation that can extend away from our system, you might be able to get that information here. That goes a lot more into a lot of the content stuff, and I'm not going to speak too far into that. I primarily just wanted to brief you onto the many different ways that we're trying to improve our signage and wayfinding and actually make sure that we can do it in the most suitable, compliant way that not only fits the needs of our accessibility community, but also fits within the architectural limitations that we have in our stations. Next slide, please. So this is just a diagram. It'll kind of show you, if you're on one of our platforms, this is an aerial view looking down. All the arrows, the red arrows, indicate where you would see a typical platform shelter. Now, in each of these shelters, there's two displays. Like I said, one on the front side and one on the rear facing side. So no matter which side of the platform you're standing on, there will be a display available to you. So with this having six red arrows, that would be a total of 12 digital displays just in the shelters alone. However, we also have what we call the info hubs on the platform, which would be for each one of these sites, you have a green arrow, are four digital displays, two facing each side of the platform. Now, these take place of the information that you could have gotten from the static signage that's now been disappearing from our platforms. But as you can see, that this offers us the ability to customers the information, not only that we're removing, but a vast amount of information that we can never do with a static sign. Next slide, please. And here's just another illustration, an early conceptual drawing of where we started with our freestanding totem area platform. Here we go as a platform. This is a lot what we have going on currently at Metro Center. This is Metro Center's platform. Skip ahead just a little bit. One slide back. Okay. So right now we have deployed some of these at Metro Center to accommodate our expansion with the Silver Line Phase 2, as station and headless could no longer be accommodated practically within our system using static signage. This is an example. Again, we have each one of these red arrows symbolizes two digital displays, except for the ones that are separated near the elevator on the left of the screen. Those were separated because we have an elevator there. And again, this also shows some of the challenges we're dealing with our architecture. We have columns, we have escalator wellways, we have elevator shafts. A lot of things that we need to be very flexible in our approach on being able to provide the content that we're trying to push out to our customers to improve the experience and the wayfinding abilities within the stations. Next slide, please. And this is just another platform. This one here is a typical above ground station like you would see at Arlington Cemetery or perhaps Chevrolet or... and what you'll see here is that we have provided, again, just several, when you have a split platform or a side platform, we like to call them, on each side of the platform, we're providing different points of access for information. Next slide, please. Okay, so that kind of brings us to kind of the background of A, why we got rid of the station ahead list, and two, what we hope to replace them with, and our goals of achieving not only more information at our fingertips, but actually compliant information at our fingertips, with the ability to work with our ADA team to ensure that the information is provided under all the guidelines. And as we all know, guidelines change from era to era. So should anything change as far as, you know, font size requirements, the way that the information is presented, how do we view Flickr rate? How fast can we, you know, compliantly present information in transition? By having these digital platforms within our labs, within our programming departments, we can actually go in and make sure that all of our signage or information being presented meets current guidelines, and we no longer have things that fall into the level of obsolescence. So I hope that I provided some information that shines a bit of light on, you know, some of the questions and concerns that we have out there. I'm open to questions. If anything I skipped over or went over too fast with you, or maybe I didn't go into enough detail or anything, please feel free to ask me. I know my colleague Brian Anderson, he's a visionary behind a lot of the content and how he hopes to be able to make sure that WMATA is pushing up useful information and improving the customer experience. I'm sure he's available for questions as well. So I'll stop there. I'm probably rambling too much, but I get
Thank
nervous.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Chair Calabia, before we, before we move into the question session, I would ask Brian to share any comments or any information that he wants, because I do know that he's time bound and he has only a couple of minutes. So Brian, if you would just go ahead and share any information if you have. If you want, I can show your presentations at this time.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Okay. Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Anderson. I'm our Director of Innovation and Digital Communications. I've been at Metro for 9 years and had the pleasure of speaking to a couple incarnations of this group over my time here. So thanks for your time and, you know, thanks for your interest in this topic. I think that Tom has covered everything quite well. He mentioned a few things about how we're slowly working towards developing our content strategy around all of the new digital wayfinding signage being installed. The 10 stations that underwent the platform improvement project, that was our dipping our toe in the water. Thomas mentioned station modernization, which once that program takes a little more shape, we'll see more digitization of wayfinding across the system. And then he mentioned Metro Center and Cheverly, which is part of Silver Line Phase 2. So what we're doing collaboratively is trying to unify all of these screens onto one system and, you know, design for the possibilities that he talked about here. But what's important on the screen right now for your consideration is some of the actual content out in the field today. Thomas showed the artist renderings of the screen, so I just thought it was valuable to go over some of the content and so you can see the applications in real life. So on the left is West Falls Church on the mezzanine level. It's what we call our information hub. So it's that collection of four screens. We have communications messaging at the top, which is the cover your face graphic. And then we have the Metro Rail system map. East Falls Church features the Metro bus local area map as well. And as I get some of that content, we plan to deploy a mix of bus and rail information on the mezzanine for customers. To the right, that picture in this slide is a hanging information cube. I know that some on this group have participated in a discussion with our IT team over the deployment of this cube. The concept of the cube was that as customers are coming into the station, they'll see rail information, and as they're exiting, they'll see bus information. So those began to get turned on in the last week or two. And on the right is a visual of what that looks like at one of our Orange Line stations today. Next slide. And then Thomas mentioned the totem and the shelter. And so what you're looking at is on the shelter, or built into the shelter at East Falls Church. Here's an interior screen and an exterior screen. And then on the far right of the slide is a totem, also with the system map at Eisenhower Avenue. Interesting to note, it's a small detail, but worth mentioning. Part of digitization means that we can update customer information quicker. And so that system map on the far right was from this summer and represents some of our closed stations out on the Silver Line and the Orange Line. So if you were new to Metro or just riding it, you know, for the first time in a while, especially with the pandemic going on, we were able to change the system map to represent how the service was operating and what stations were closed. So with that, I will thank Thomas, thank everybody, and also ask if there are any questions or comments.
Well, to start off, let me ask a question about whether these are interactive. In New York, for example, a passenger on a station platform can often approach one of the digital signs and touch it, and a variety of options come up. You could ask how to get from where you are to somewhere else. Are any of the new signs that you've shown us interactive with riders?
That's a great question. So the screens that were installed in our Platform Improvement Project 2 stations, East Falls Church, West Falls Church, Dunloring, and Vienna, are touch capable. We have not turned on that feature yet, but part of the reason for the inclusion in that is because we did a little bit of the lessons learned from Platform Improvement Project 1, and also the touch technology advanced just a little when we did some previewing, very high level previewing in our labs, and determined that it was worth it for language and accessibility in the future. I'm sorry, language and accessibility support in the future. The challenge that we have right now is just, you know, one, we're in a pandemic, so we recognize not everyone is ready to touch a screen today. Right. Also, we do need a little bit of a strategy around designing for touch, and that's what we're trying to get the right resources to do that.
I haven't been in New York since the pandemic began, so I'm not sure how they're operating the touch screens in New York. But once you've developed it so that it works in the stations that you've mentioned, will it be applied to all stations eventually, the touchscreen application?
That's a great question. Thomas, help me out on that. I think our new standard is that type of screen.
Yes. So our as a part as we're, you know, we're working with Brian, we're working with a lot of engineering groups and ADA departments within WMATA to come up with what we think a modernized station or updated station would look like. In those stations, yes, each station shall be outfitted with one form of this app, of this technology. Like I identified three of them in this presentation. There's the totem, the shelter, as well as the hubs. We did three because we have several different platform layouts. We have above ground, below ground. We have transfer stations. We have all kinds of challenges from an architectural standpoint. But the one consistent is that we have a digital display that we can feed the information to the rider. So yes, as we're rolling forward, right now we're going into phase four. We're preparing for phase four of our platform improvement project. We just completed two. Phase three is in the works right now. We're meeting with consultants and contractors. The contract has been awarded. We're getting submittals and we're reviewing those. we should probably see a completion of that probably by the summer. I don't want to hold anyone to that schedule, but that's the objective, is by spring, those stations will probably be ready to open up, and those are Addison Road and Arlington. After that, we'll go into phase four, which is going to include station out along Greenbelt, West Falls Church, West Hydesville, PG Plaza, that span of track out that way. So we're chugging along. There's several different phases that we're trying to implement this, but this is the new standard. This is the new norm for us, is to remove certain static signage and then replace with updated, flexible, dynamic digital displays inside of new customer amenities, like the shelters with the USB plugins and the, you know, emergency message capabilities. As far as signage goes, we have done an outstanding job of meeting with all of the first responders in the jurisdictions to make sure that we are on cue with every possible scenario that they would request of us, to make sure that we can have a safe egress from our stations in the event of an emergency. Working closely with our fire marshal's department here in WMATA, all of the jurisdictions, fire chiefs and fire marshals are involved in the conversation and sitting down with us on a regular basis, making sure that we meet all the criteria. So safety, customer information, accessibility, WMATA is really taking all this very seriously. And we are, and you know, to answer your question, yes, we're rolling this out everywhere. As long as we have funding and we can get the support we need to implement this is the new criteria, the new standard. Potomac Yard Station is coming to us soon. It's going to follow the same guidelines. It's going to have the digital displays. It's going to have all the safety features. It's going to have the customer amenities. So this is WMATA. This is who we are now. This is how we're proceeding forward. I think it's going to be advantageous to all of our customers. And I think that it's an exciting time to be a part of this organization.
Thank you. My last question before others chime in. Again, in New York, they have displays in the stations which give different information. And for example, the one that I'm familiar with and that I have pictures of is, for example, to remind riders that they should be accommodating to people with disabilities. They have other messages in a loop, and these are not digital displays that are digital interactive with riders, but they're standalone and they show in a loop different messages, including those messages that apply to people with disabilities. Do you envision any of those kind of things?
I can answer just based off this, you know, from a technology standpoint and where we strategically placed all of these on our platforms. That's kind of where I can speak to. And I think from my department, we've made sure that we have no black spots, meaning no spots where you don't have information accessible to you. But Brian's department under CSCM, you want to talk to the content that you're pushing with the awareness videos like the...
like in New York.
Well, I'll just say this. I appreciate, I do appreciate everything that New York is doing to advance customer information.
Has
and,
done.
And modernize it as well. As a Jersey boy, I totally have my eyes on that agency all the time. You know, it's sort of like I said, we're piecing together a digital strategy. You know, there are three key components. There's the infrastructure, which you're starting to see in these stations that we're talking about today. There's software, which is what we're actively working to modernize. And then of course, there's the content itself. And after, with the right software and the right design comes, you know, better content. We're always open to hearing what messaging ideas you have, and you know, where you think some of the needs are, and then figuring out how we can help support that.
I will send you pictures from New York, and other systems elsewhere have these kind of features. I will send you, which I've shown to members before, what is possible, what has been long possible, and hopefully we can achieve that here. Other members, any questions? Chair. Is Doris here? Is Doris?
Chair Calabria, I do have three people who have their hands up. Anthony, followed by Philippa, and then Barbara.
And myself.
Doris, is Doris here?
I have not seen her on the line yet.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Anthony?
Steve, okay, I will add you on the line to the list. Anthony, go ahead, please.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Anthony. Thank you both for that presentation. I think you've already answered one of my questions. One of them was the touchscreen application. I think that, you know, once people are ready to be able to zoom into things, that would be really helpful from an accessibility standpoint. But one of the questions I do have is related to something I think you talked about, Tom, which is how quickly can the information be updated on the screens? So say, for example, you know, the community comes back and says, you know, this color or this something or other on within the information isn't actually accessible or I can't see it. How quickly can that change be made? Just as a quick question. And then the other curious question I had is that you mentioned that one of the issues with the static signs was the brake dust from the trains in the station. And what kind of things might you guys do in order to protect these digital screens from the same kind of thing?
So I'll answer that last part about the digital displays and the brake dust and that stuff. Brian will go more into the content avenue. Well, one of the things is that we're trying to get anything signs that we can remove from the vault walls, we are. That's where we have all of our issues. Is anything that's across that track bed. If you're standing down in Gallery Place and you look across the track as you're waiting for this for the train, those signs over there, you know, in some stations, we have station ahead list over there. And to be honest with you, some of the biggest problems we had with have been with the materials of some of the signs that we have out there. We like to see porcelain enamel. Porcelain enamel withstands the test of time. It's resistance. It has an incredible resistance against brake dust as long as you have it on a regular maintenance schedule. But sad case is that we have a ton of aluminum signage out there with vinyl lettering on it. What happens is that vinyl lettering gets a static charge on it. That static charge starts picking up particles of dust and all that. So by trying to make sure that we keep our signage that are on the vault walls, porcelain enamel, removing the aluminum stuff, and a lot of the aluminum ones, and a lot even some of the station names, but a ton of them are the, not all, but many, are the station ahead list, are made out of aluminum vinyl graphics on them, and they're extremely problematic. So part of it's maintenance issues. Some of it is the choice of materials that we use due to certain things being termed short-term. But because of politics, funding, who knows what, they've become permanent when they never should have been permanent. So what we're trying to do is remove what we can away from the vault walls because there's maintenance challenges. We want to avoid maintenance challenges. Have as few signs over there as possible. If they are signs that must be there, i.e. station name signs, they remain intact and they're made of porcelain enamel. We've actually revised our station name signs to a smaller sign size because of the fact that the larger sign that we had before, they were 12 feet wide, right? It was only one vendor in the United States that was able to produce that sign, which put us in a world of hurt when it came down to we have schedules to keep, projects, deadlines, and able to achieve this. So what ended up happening is because of time and these issues, we started throwing up aluminum signs all over the place with vinyl graphics. So we reduced the profile of our signs, which opened us up to several more vendors to be able to meet scheduled challenges, as well as it's going to prove to be a big help to us from a maintenance standpoint. Now, as far as content, that's on Brian. What do you think, Brian?
Here's what I'll just add about content. So right now, what we're using is our standard, all of our standard imagery, because what you're looking at is all simply static content. It's, you know, an image. So it's the same system app that's printed. Same with the communications messages. 9 times out of 10, you'll see them printed as well as now digitally. But as we move forward and we build applications and, you know, have the ability to touch and change and zoom, it might get a little tougher, but we won't deploy something without one, all of the right, you know, considerations from this group and your concern, Anthony, two, user testing And also, you know, we would also provision that we would have to update things along the way. So I think that we're in the clear, and, you know, even by my standards, the reason we go digital is for a faster turnaround time. May right. not be an hour, but I would hope that it's not weeks or months.
Yeah.
And that's what you're looking at when it comes time to change a static signs, we're looking at, you know, weeks to do a full rollout of new signage. Should the orange line stop short for about 4 weeks due to construction, it's going to take us several weeks and many thousands of dollars to put up that information and then change it back when it's done.
Yeah, and another just quick example, unfortunately I didn't illustrate it, but if anyone, you know, wants imagery, when Metrobus service ran a very limited weekday and weekend schedule, we showed both a static map for the weekday service. Then it was just the platform one project stations, and then it automatically turned overnight. So on Saturday morning when the system opened, the customers were shown a weekend schedule, and it flipped back and forth as long as we ran those. So those are things that, you know, we can do with digital, even though you're just looking at an image that we can't do even with static signage that Thomas is talking about today.
Okay, Anthony, if not.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Next, Anu.
Next we have Philippa. Go ahead, Philippa.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for the presentation. I may only have one question, which if it is answered to my satisfaction, I won't have any more. But I wanted to clarify, you're removing all the pylons with the printed station ahead signage.
No, not necessarily the pylons. Only the sign on the pylon. The pylons are still going to remain intact because we do still have some wayfinding signage that we are going to keep on the pylons. We call them G06. That means to you probably nothing. But what it looks like is there's a color disc with the lettering in. So if it was a red disc with the RD inside, and it would have Glenmont with the arrow. So that type of signage is going to remain. It's just that we're not going to have this long list on the pylon. Instead of you seeing that long list of stations that are along the whole red line, what you're going to get is a digital display that's going to be able to give you a full map. So you'll see the whole system. You're not just limited to the red line. You're going to be able to say, okay, this is my whole trip along the red line. If I want to use the red line to get to McLean and I have to make a transfer to the silver line somewhere, it's going to give you all that information versus being limited just to what's on the red line. So we did some customer studies that kind of say that, hey, station maps actually are a little bit more beneficial to the list.
Sounds great.
So wait a minute, I'm not through. That wasn't to my satisfaction. So you're saying that you're going to have, instead of, you won't list any of the stations that are next, just the, you'll have a map and an arrow that says Glenmont or Silver Spring or whatever.
Well, that's not necessarily true.
That goes into
the digital displays. The digital displays, once they come into full fruition of what they're fully capable of doing, and they can do a lot, they're like cell phones on the platform. You should be able to have the capability to, if that's what the content provides us, to have a scrolling station ahead list and a map and your nearest restaurant and where to catch an Uber. And, you know, so we want to be able to provide the station ahead list and anything else that we, you know, based off customer feedback and reactions, they feel that that's what the information that's required on the platform, they'll have that.
Okay.
May I just add, so digital wayfinding is part of, or the way we see it, we see digital wayfinding as part of overall wayfinding. So as Tom explained, at different steps along the way, you'll get additional pieces or different pieces of information. So because we want to stay in compliance, some of the pylon directionals will just feature an arrow, color, and ultimate train destination. Then a little bit down the platform, there'll be a system map, digital or static, depending on the station. And then the way we also see it is then when you get on our newest train, the 7000 series, you have the station ahead list in the direction you're traveling up above. So I'm hoping that puts a little bit of perspective in terms of how we see the strategy.
Okay, well, my question is really for a low vision community, because telling, if you're saying you're going to have signs across the on the wall between the platform, well, where the train would be between the sign and the platform, and that they're 2 inches and that's visible at 15 feet. If you have low vision, 2 inches, it may as well be 150 feet. You're not going to be able to see it at 15 feet. So all I'm trying to make sure is that there's going to be something that is easily accessible that a person with low vision can get up close to if they need to see what the station ahead is.
Yes, Good point. Who's next, Anu?
Steve, and then Barbara.
Okay, thanks. First of all, this was an excellent presentation. Excellent. And the previous presentations you made to us were excellent. They're filled with pictures and diagrams and a lot of detail. So once again, congratulate. Whenever you're here, it's a learning experience. So thank you. I have a few questions. So maybe you could just laser the answers if it's just one or two. The 8,000 series cars, I think the 7,000 series cars, the map of the network, the train network, is not in the middle door, is not at the middle door. Rather, it's only at the side doors. And once a train gets crowded, if a person needs that, particularly a visitor, they're fighting their way to either side, or they're getting off at the next stop to try to figure out where they are. Is it possible to put a map in the center door also?
Good point.
I wish I could answer that. That's for another department who handles.
Oh, I didn't realize. Okay.
But what we are doing, I can tell you that you're going to see more maps on this platform than you've ever seen before. Right. It's going to be glorious as far as maps goes on the platform. Right. On the train, I don't know. That's not really something I can control.
Okay. Also, that's great that you say that. Another of my questions is there going to be a map at each of the escalators coming down? I found in the current stations, which you may have identified, that sometimes you have to walk almost to the middle of the station from the time you enter from the sides in order to get that map that you need. You're saying it's going to be closer to where people enter.
Yeah. So, and with our new design standard for our stations, it's going to be as so. You're going to come in through an entrance. You're going to be faced with 4 opportunities to see a map. You're going to pass through the fare gate. You're going to have 2 more opportunities to see a map. You're going to go down the platform. The first shelter you get to, there's a map. And then there's 15 more maps on the platform. So if you don't see a map before getting on that train, you don't want to see a map.
All right. Well, one thing Phil raised, I think, at the last time you were here, and I found this also, the mezzanine next train information at 1 minute, I think it's 1 minute, cuts it off. In other words, there's a train coming, but you don't see that at the mezzanine. And I know the reason you don't want to have a stampede, but what I've seen for quite some time is you're actually causing a stampede. And the reason why is people look and say, well, when is the train after that coming? And if it's, let's say, 3 minutes, then people instinctively rush to get down, figuring that there is a train coming. So people who know the system actually are creating a stampede by not having that information. And I just wanted to let you know, you may want to do some observation and see if that's the case.
Great point.
I don't know whether you're dealing with signage at Metro Center, but I still get lost at that station in determining where things are. The biggest signs, and they should be almost everywhere, are signs, and I'm just going to use the red line, you know, the transferring onto the red line. Big signs when you get off the train, Shady Grove or you know, are you planning to do that as part of this project?
Yes, that station is a very tricky one. I will admit I get lost in Metro Center sometimes, and you know, sometimes more signs is more confusing than having any signs. So what we're trying to do, and this is a part of that mysterious station modernization project that we're trying to get out. It's taken another look at a lot of the wayfinding, and especially transfer stations. I've gone through and I've put together preliminary drafts where we've streamlined some of the information. We actually have some additional station exit wayfinding signs that we're going to employ on that platform, as well as Lafont Plaza Gallery Place. Gallery Place is a good example of what we're looking to do there. We actually have some signage across the vault wall that will actually tell you a little bit more directional information.
Yeah, Gallery Place is definitely better. Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're taking some learning stuff that we got from Gallery Place, and we're going to start applying that to our transfer stations, Metro Center, Lafont Plaza, because they're extremely confusing. And there's like five different exits that you can get out there. Yeah. So we identify that those stations are being heavily focused on for our station modernization plans. I spent 2 weeks looking at station at Metro Center, walked it, documented, have blueprint drawings, sat down with Brian, sat down with our director of architecture to try to figure out, you know, how can we put digital stuff in here to give more better predictions.
All right, thanks. So, okay, but here, I have one more thing, and it's kind of a very important.
We're a half hour late.
Would you coordinate the writing of the messages such that the messages are written short and succinct, especially since there are only a certain number of lines at any one reader? And this is really coordinating. It's not even your department, but I've noticed some of the messages are much longer than they could be, and they take up a lot of time for people to wait for them to complete. Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We have a low vision guest, Barbara. You're very good at these kinds of analysis.
Hey, well, thank you, Tino. 10 years here, and I'm still a guest. That's pretty awesome.
Barbara, okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to say that Brian Anderson has to leave the meeting. We have held these gentlemen for over almost 35 minutes now. So I appreciate that. Thank you. But Barbara, before you went on with your question, Brian has to leave. So Brian, thank you very much for staying.
Thank you. Is there anything I can answer quickly before I go? Or
go, Barbara. Go, Barbara.
Okay. I have 4 points, please. You're talking about enlarging the screens to, I believe it was 55 inches, and that's really great. Now, does that mean that the font size will be increased or from the previous lower size, or that you will be cramming more words into that screen?
No, the 55 inch, through our studies and actually using them in the labs, the 55 inch is to make sure that we can provide sufficient ADA compliant text sizes. We're not shrinking in order to pack in more stuff. We're following the T. I mean, ask Carol. We have her in the lab, and she's checking us at every turn, making sure we're not breaking the rules. So we are making sure that the fonts, the backgrounds, and everything meet the ADA compliances.
Okay, so just to clarify, the size of the font on the 55 inch will be larger than, say, on a 45.
No, not necessarily. The 55 inch is driven just by the universal uses of it. We can use it in places where we need really big text, like the new PIDs, the new train prediction displays that you'll see. The fonts on those need to be huge. 3-inch fonts mounted overhead at 9 feet up in the air. We needed a 55 inch. We use a 55 inch everywhere. That way, if one screen breaks down somewhere, we don't have to go looking for a bunch of different screen sizes. We have the one screen that we use everywhere. It's universal. And what the 55 inch does actually gives us when we have it down at eye level is to be able to put a lot of information on there and still be within compliance.
Your second point, Barbara?
Okay. I just want to clarify that when you're talking about touchscreen earlier, would that the user be able to, for example, triple tap and then stretch it out and move it just like I can do on my smartphone?
Brian, you want to ask that? You want me to answer?
I unfortunately can't speak to that at this moment. You know, that would go through a design process. And, you know, if that's a best practice to mimic exactly what's on a smartphone, I just can't guarantee that a 55-inch screen effectively triple taps and stretches. The point of touch is to engage it in some sort of zoom and magnification. That would be an ideal design to start. And then, you know, whatever is possible when we have the right resources in place and start down that, we would probably exercise it and, you know, start to get to that level of detail.
Third question, okay. Barbara.
Let me tell you that the reason why I'm asking is because a lot of the information on your information maps, for example, the community map outside of the station, people with low vision, partial sight, they can't necessarily see what's going on the top of the map. So if they could kind of, being that they can't get taller, if you will, you have to bring the map down to them. So that is what I'm looking for, is something that they could read at eye level, enlarged. And okay, my third point is, do you have the maintenance schedule for actually cleaning the screens of the PIDs?
We don't. That's handled by our maintenance group. They have their own set of directives and schedules that they follow, and we hardly ever have any participation in that. We know from procurement and the study that we've done for these displays over months and years, we can tell you some predictions about life cycle. They're so robust though. These screens, I mean, they're vandal resistant. You can hit them with baseball bats. They can be submerged and they'll still take a licking and keep on ticking. But as far as how WMATA conducts its maintenance schedules, Ryan and I are not the ones to answer that question.
Okay, if you guys could get with those people and tell them to increase the frequency of the cleaning of the screens, because I have noticed a difference. When I was out on the Silver Line phase one, of course, those look totally different to me. And I was like, wow, this is really awesome. Can't we have those over on our other stations that have been in business for 40 odd years? And someone told me they're exactly the same. And I'm like, whoa, then we need to step up on the cleaning, because it's much more visible. And I got to tell you, for people with partial sight, every little bit helps. Thank you for passing that along, if you indeed could. You keep talking about testing in the lab. And, you know, people with disabilities were involved with the testing of the machines, the turnstiles and stuff like that. But I never heard of anybody with vision loss being invited to the testing for these PIDs and all these things, because we are the end users and we would love to help you guys out and provide information.
Barbara, I'm sorry, this is Carol Lopez. What they meant by testing in the labs, although we didn't provide a visual display for the maps, we are Zooming, we were video conferencing. In the past, we, as you may recall, we've had PID signs brought into the conference room.
I do.
For everyone to look at, and based on your feedback and others, we have changed background colors, etc. So that's what we mean by testing it. It's not like we go and all of us are Michelangelos and creating this. It's we give feedback, and it's not as it's basically we're giving them feedback. And it's okay. Similar to what you've had the advantage of doing in the past. Like, for example, those bus arrival signs, they were presented to the advisory committee maybe a couple of months ago. And because of your recommendations, we changed the background color and some contrast issues, and they were that's what has been put in place.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. I know you're in a rush there, so I'm going to give my final point now. You're talking about you're very eager to hear what we have to say. I am at a loss for what to say because I don't know what you have available, like a menu of choices for us to say, oh, you know, we'd like number one, number two, and number three, and hold a dessert. So if you could show us what you have, then we'd be more than happy to help you with that, because we don't all, especially now, we can't get over to New York, Boston, Philadelphia, etc., where we might be getting some of our ideas. So
I think today was a little bit more, I don't mean to cut you off, I'm sorry if I did.
Yeah, no, I'm done.
Yeah, I think today was more of an introduction thing. We're introducing, because there were some questions asked that, hey, you know, we need to get in there and we need to explain what's going on. Introducing you. I don't think we're in any way, form, or fashion at our end game as far as what we plan to do with all this digital technology. But we just want to reassure everyone that, you know, we're not removing information and replacing it with nothing. We actually are removing stuff that doesn't work for us anymore for many different reasons. And we're implementing new technology that's going to open up doors for us that weren't open before. Once these doors are open and we start getting more into where Brian and his staff can start implementing strategies and content and things of that nature, we'll be back to talk to you some more. I promise you that. Right now, okay. You know, we're not getting anybody or leaving anyone out. We're making some changes and we want you to know about them.
Thank you. We love Metro. So thank you.
Thanks a lot, Brian and Tom. And
reclaiming my time. I was cut off before I got to finish my question.
This is Vanessa. I would like to ask a question. My hand's been raised.
Right. And okay. They cut me off while I was trying to ask a question. This is Philippa.
Sorry, Philippa. Go ahead, Philippa.
Okay. I just wanted to know if I saw something about 6 feet, how tall these signs would be for the station ahead. And I am glad to hear that this is not a totally done deal, so we can have input, Barbara and myself and other people with the low vision community. But anyway, I was just curious about how tall these signs station ahead on the platform are projected to be.
Well, the station ahead lists that are out there now that have not been impacted by our modernization strategy have not changed, mm-hmm. It's only the stations that have been upgraded to the new technology, which you will no longer see these on these typical station ahead lists on pylons. The station ahead lists on stations that have been updated go away. What you get is a digital display that can show you station maps, station ahead lists, and much more. So as far as
what is the height on them? I want to make sure they don't start at 6 feet or something.
No.
We followed
every compliance standard, mounting height requirement. No, we are within every aspect of compliance as far as that goes. Okay. That was our whole thing, is that we didn't want to do something that was not compliant. So
all right, thank you.
We did is make sure everything.
Yes.
Vanessa?
Yes, real quick, and you may have answered. I'm concerned those signage on the muzzling sign platform that are on the wall, are those going to be updated or and added more frequent? Because I can recall I'm trying to strain to see what the wall where I was, or maybe digitalized and flashing, maybe something that you can tell where you are before the train pulls off, kind of thing.
Oh, so the sign that has the station's name on it?
Yeah, on the walls, because I used to use that as a focal point to see where I was, and I didn't see enough to make me nervous. I didn't know where I was.
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, what we've seen from some of the stations that we've updated, we've actually cleaned them up. We've added more. So like some, The standard now is 12 of those signs per platform side. So if I'm standing there looking across that bed, there's 12 of them the whole distance of the platform. Before, you might have had some stations that were missing a couple, that it might have, you know, some might have been really damaged or dirty. So part of our update process is to actually follow a new standard. Is every 25 feet you'll see those. As well as make them cleaner. They're going to be made of the proper material that's going to be more resistant to the dust and debris. And we're improving our lighting as well. I'm not sure if you've had anybody from the architectural department come in and talk about the lighting, but we're really making advances in the lighting in the stations too. And they're making a big difference as far as how well these signs across the track bed are being read. So those aren't going anywhere. We're not talking about those. You're gonna see those and a couple more in certain spots as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Brian. Very much.
All right. Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.
Yes,
welcome. For having us.
Yes. We are now at less than 20 minutes before adjournment. We are behind by more than a half hour. The next item is titled Metro is Safe for Riders with Disabilities and Seniors, which is a future statement because Metro is not necessarily safe now for riders with disabilities and seniors. Just to start off, Barbara, who maybe have left us, Barbara Millville, she raised some questions on the filtration system, which is German.
I'm still here.
Oh, good, good, thank you. But anyway, Barbara had raised the question of cost. And as I mentioned in emails that I shared with everyone, I believe it's probably related to capital budget and not necessarily to the threatened expense budget. With respect to cost, again, there is at least one manufacturer. I don't see everything. Maybe there are more manufacturers, but one who's nearby in Westminster, Maryland, is willing to come and install one free. And there's also been articles in which the authors claim that a great filtration system, as I've been describing, the germicidal filtration system, could pay off in a matter of years. And in fact, assuming they would last longer, when this, we're into, quote, the post-pandemic era, that doesn't mean that there won't be viruses in the air. Look, there have been viruses in the air of the flu of 1918, over 100 years ago. There have been flu viruses and many people catch them now. On some years, up to 35,000 people die a year. And so like there will continue to be some viruses for flu, there will probably be, I'm guessing, coronaviruses, and Dr. Fauci and some of the other medical scientists and epidemiologists have anticipated more epidemics in our lifetime. So hopefully, if we ever get a germicidal filtration system, they will last us for the remnants of the corona pandemic, the coronavirus, as well as flu virus or any other virus that comes along. We now have just less than 15 minutes. I'm sorry that we can't get into more discussion about how to get WMATA safe. Let me mention that, finally, on my part, let me mention that while the metro system is probably safer than the bus system, I don't think the bus system is that safe. The operators of these vehicles, most of them who have died across the country have died in buses. So I fear that the buses are more dangerous, even though they're the ones that are most used by minorities and poor people. In fact, some of them only use buses, And I don't think that the buses are anywhere near as safe as the metro subway system. And I'm not sure how safe they are. We now have, I guess we have 15 minutes. Is there any other comments before we go to the ombudsman report? If not, David, let's hear the ombudsman report.
I don't have much tonight, and I'll try to go quickly. The only thing that was left on my list was the cleaning of the signs at the lower level of Roslyn. And it's been done, so somebody needs to tell me if there's still visibility problems down there.
Does anybody have any knowledge of what the status is?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. This concern was brought forth by Dr. Posner, and he's not on the call with us today. But I will email him, and he's not in town anyways. So if there's any feedback, David will, I'll be more than happy to share that with you later on.
Okay. We'll just table that until he returns.
Sure.
Are there any issues that anybody else has that they want to raise with me?
We have a number of guests on board. Anyone else have anything that David could look into?
I have a request about those signs. Barbara speaking.
Sure, Barbara, go ahead.
I was wondering if the cleaner by chance or someone else within the cleaning department had taken a picture of like before and after, and that would be an easy way for us to see an improvement if any would be noted.
Good point, Barbara. I did not have the foresight to ask them to do that.
Yeah, because a lot of us are not traveling, but that's a frequent station for me, and I know Doris as well.
Yes, all right, well, you know, please let Doris know. She can let me know as well.
I'm sorry that Doris wasn't with us today for these particular items. Anything else for David or other comments?
Thank you, David.
Oh, yes, David. David, hi, it's Steve. I didn't raise this for lack of time on the signage question, but we're about the only bus system that I know that uses only two lines. In the individual bus kiosks. And turns them over every 7 to 8 seconds. This is of particular, the people who are most adversely affected are some of our constituents, because they're the ones who, for whatever reason, don't have the phones out or available and rely upon that next bus information. Okay. And they're the ones that are vulnerably watching the screen for a minute to a minute and a half, waiting for something simple, which is just their bus number and the time it comes. Mm-hmm. What the biggest problem is when there are alternative buses. Let's say somebody can take one of three buses. There's one preferred that will get them closer to their homes. But if it's a very long wait, they'll opt for the second or the third. I know we have certain requirements that we need to meet. I think that's been brought up. But if you could possibly look into, are we over meeting those requirements? And is there something we could do in meeting the requirements, but also giving us even four lines of information, as most bus systems I know do, and speed them up such that, you know, it, if you have something fast, if somebody misses something, they can get it very quickly. If somebody misses something and it takes a minute to a minute and a half to get back again, it can be a bit frustrating. And so I'm just wondering if you might look into the requirements and to see if they're overly done. An additional aspect which is adding a lot of time is the fact that we now have digital announcements for masks being required, as well as digital announcements for buses being delayed due to the new system. If a line is three, if a message is three lines, it can add a minute. A couple of messages can add a minute to a person who is waiting only to see their bus number and next bus. So perhaps you could look into how we're complying with the legal requirements and whether we're over complying.
I understand the issue. I mean, I doubt if we can change from two lines to three lines with the existing technology, but I've looked at this stuff myself over in the bus planning department, and I have the same challenge. Due to what's happened to my eyes, I cannot read quickly, even when I'm able to see it. But there's a tension between that and getting the messages out quickly enough to be useful before the bus is gone. So, you know, there is a tension, and I'll certainly look into any technical requirements for that. But in some ways, it's a matter of judgment as to how far you can go on that spectrum.
Steve, you've ridden on buses all around the world and even written about it. And I've not traveled as much as you, but I think I've seen some bus terminals which have more than two lines. How about you? Have you seen any around the world?
I've, in all honesty, the least number of lines I've seen has been three. Mm-hmm. And the norm is four. And depending upon the size of the bus kiosk, sometimes six. But and in addition, I've never seen, David, you're so right. There needs to be a balance in how frequently they turn over between readability and providing immediacy of the message. And I've never seen something this slow, but then again, it could be that we're doing it right. And so I guess my question is more if, the balance. The other thing is I'm noticing the messages are just not being written as succinct as they could be. Mm-hmm. And so they're taking up an extra 14 to 21 seconds. And that might be, in any case, we're running out of time. Thanks. Sorry.
The other question about some bus systems in the U.S. are able to forecast on such readouts at terminals, not only when the bus is coming, but whether they're, they're overfilled in terms of social distance. You know, a 40-foot bus is limited by social distance to about 12 riders, and a 60-foot bus is limited to 18 riders. Mm-hmm. So when buses are over that, in some places, the messages at the stations can tell you when a bus is overfilled, or if it's beyond being socially distanced the right way, whether you're willing to get on board.
Yeah, I understand that we're working with that technology, actually, that we're trying to get part of the app that we're doing. It's a wayfinding app that used to be with beacons, but beacons are passe now. My funding for that got pushed into the next fiscal year, but that is a feature that does exist with that kind of wayfinding technology, principally for people that have cognitive or other kind of disabilities where they can't get into a crowded bus, and it tells them to let the next bus pass by. So that's coming.
Yes, whenever you talk to those who are in a position to do something, remind them, David, you know, when our metro system opened up, what, 55 years ago or so, we were the leader in the world. You know, there wasn't any better system than ours, nor many claim no more beautiful system than ours. And now we're so far behind. We've talked about what New York has done. And, you know, there are other places that have so many features that we don't have. And yet we're so far behind now, even though when we were born, we were the best in the world.
We're catching up and we're surpassing with some of the stuff we're working on, and between what I'm doing and what Brian Anderson's doing, we're trying to leap forward on technology. And I think there's a commitment to it.
Yeah, well, thanks for that, David. I'm sure you're doing what you can, but you know, I'm trying to put it in terms where maybe it'll have more appeal for all of us to remember that we used to be the leader in the entire world in terms of our systems, or at least the metro system.
We're still, I'm sorry, Tino, but I must say we're still the metro system that has an elevator in every station. So that means it's accessible to everyone. Yes,
right.
You know, we are still people, every single bus that we have is fully accessible to people with disabilities. They provide announcements for people who are blind. They have lifts to, they have ramps to enter the buses, every single one of them. None of our stations are not accessible.
Let me mention that we're not the only ones. The newer systems that have been built are fully accessible. Only New York system, which is our oldest in the US, is inaccessible for 3/4 of its stations, and they're trying to get there. So I'm not trying to put down what we have been. I appreciate what we are, but we're falling behind in many ways. It is, I have 557.
But can I ask a quick question? Because I like reference. And so when we say, because again, I've been all around this country and I have not found a system that has two elevators at every station or even one elevator at every station. I have not found that yet. There may be out there, but when you say we're falling behind, give me the reference, give me the goal model we can attain if you're saying there's a system more accessible than Metro.
Well, we were talking before about buses and at the terminals, how many lines explain which buses are coming and where. And in those terms we've mentioned, I've seen at least 3 of those lines in bus stations. And Steve says there can be up to 6. With respect to our metro, we still, you know, I pointed out to our guests, what is the name, Tom and Brian, that there have been interactive applications for the kind of signs that they were describing today. We don't have that. You know, I can go to New York and in an underground station, I can touch screen and I can ask, you know, how do I get to another station somewhere? And it can tell me. I can ask them other things too. That's what I'm talking about, Chris.
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We are at 5:59. I do want to make one quick announcement. Sure. About sure. Anyone who needs to send us any their public comments can do so by writing to metroaacchair@vamara.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100. We will contact them back. I know we've had a very full meeting today, very healthy, very concrete discussions. Anybody who has any questions for guest speakers, please email me your questions, your comments, and I would be more than happy to share them with you. The presentations, I am working on making them accessible. As you can see, there was a lot of information. I'm trying to make one presentation short enough to be shared via email. The other I'm trying to make accessible, and I will do that as soon as possible. It is 6:00.
Do I hear adjournment?
This is Darnie. So I have one question, Anu.
Yes.
When you send out the diagrams that you send out, could you also send out was one page that had the dimensions of all the signs that are required, but it didn't have any photos on it. Could you include that?
I will, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you very much, Anu. Thank you, everybody. Members and guests. Thank you.
Very good meeting. Bye-bye. Good job,
thank
Mr.
You.
Chairman.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you, Tina.
Right. Have a great week. Stay healthy, safe.
We'll
meet you at the next
subcommittee
meeting.
Settings button to activate press space bar. New button to activate press space bar. Alt F4. Zoom meeting. New button to Alt F4. End meeting. Delete meeting. Enter.